So quick to choose the path walked by the righteous, so you can go and nest among the weak. The innocent observers will refuse to find the lie within. Renew the disappointment of the meek.
Chapter 10. The Chinese food isn't ready when Styles gets to the restaurant, and he grumbles a little that Peter had made him go pick it up instead of just having it delivered. Peter reminded him that they open their doors to no one, so now he's standing there, drumming on the counter with some cheap wooden chopsticks. He feels nervous and exposed, out and about in Beacon Hills with no Peter at his back, even though he himself had reassured Peter that nobody would recognize him. Seriously, have you seen the computer-generated version of 20-year-old me? Styles asked. It could not look less like me. So there's absolutely no reason for him to be nervous. But there's this dark-haired guy at a booth in the back who's watching him. He's covert about it, not staring. But every once in a while, he glances up at Styles and his brows furrow. Styles just wants to get the food and get out. It's a relief when the order comes out. He pays cash, as always, and sticks a $5 in the tip jar before heading out. The guy in the booth follows him, and Styles transfers the bag to his left hand so he can use his shield spell if he has to. The door had just swung shut behind them when the man says, "Styles?" It's the use of the nickname that flummoxes him. Being recognized was one thing, but he'd expected the butchering of Promiswuff, not that. So he fumbles the bag and nearly drops it before he recovers and keeps walking. "Styles!" the man shouts. "Stop, you asshole! I know it's you!" Styles reluctantly turns to face him, trying not to squint as he struggles to figure out who the hell just called him out. "Look, dude, Don't even start with me," the man says. "You used to drum your chopsticks like that every time we had Chinese. It drove my dad nuts." Styles blinks at him, thinking about how much Peter is going to tease him for getting recognized by his chopstick drumming. For Christ's sake. "Okay, sure, whatever you say. You don't recognize me," he finally realizes. "Dude, it's Scott." Styles blinks again, and then his eyes widen and he blurts out, "What the actual fuck, dude?" Gone is the skinny, moppy-haired, baby-faced boy he had chased fireflies with as a child. 20-year-old Scott probably wouldn't look anything like his age progression photo either. He's as tall as Styles, tanned and with short hair, and surprisingly considerable upper body muscle. He glances around as he realizes he just gave himself away, and he says, "We should get off the street if we're gonna talk." "Sure," Scott says, and gestures to the car. Styles hesitates, rubbing his hand over the back of his hair. "Yeah, I can't really take you back to my hotel. I mean, kind of a lot has happened." "No shit, Sherlock," Scott says. "But okay, fine. Deaton's office is right down the street. Come with me." "Okay." Styles follows him down the road and gets out his phone to text Peter. His fingers tap nervously at the screen as he tries to figure out how to explain this. Finally, he sends, "We'll be an extra few minutes. Restaurant fucked up the order." Peter will probably be annoyed at the lie, but he's not going to explain this over text. Scott lets them in through a back door, and Styles is relieved to see that the place is empty except for a few dogs in kennels. Scott locks it after him, and then turns back to him and says, "What are you doing here?" Styles realizes he is utterly unprepared to have this conversation. "That's kind of hard to explain." Scott pinches the bridge of his nose. "You better not be here to kill Chris." What? Styles blurts out again. "Do you think I don't know who you are?" Scott shoots back, Do you think you're the only one who grew up after what happened? I know about werewolves, okay? I know about hunters, and I've known for years that it had to be you and Peter killing them. But you can't kill Chris. He's a good guy. Yeah, I know, Stiles says. If you've really kept up on what we've been doing, you should know we're not here to kill Chris. Wow, I have no idea what's happening right now. Can we go back to the part where you tell me how you found out about werewolves? Scott sighs. Allison Argent is my girlfriend. She moved here when I was 16. I was going through a lot back then. My dad left when I was 12, which you would know if you had been here. And my mom was working way too much, so I spent a lot of time at the Argent house, and Chris started training me. Jesus Christ, Stiles mutters. He's wandered into some nightmare territory. It seems impossible that his childhood best friend is a hunter. I heard about the serial killer and did the math. It wasn't hard. I mean, you literally actually told my mom that you were going to find people like the ones who killed your dad. The only thing I couldn't figure out was why it took you so long to get started. 'Cause I was 10? Stiles says. I had a lot to learn. I guess, Scott says. They stand in uncomfortable silence for a few minutes. Seriously, why are you here? Scott asks. Stiles opens his mouth and then closes it and shakes his head. No offense, Scotty, but I'm not telling you. I barely know you anymore. You're a hunter. You work with Chris Argent. All I'll say is that we're not here for any of the local hunting contingent. I know Chris keeps his guys in line and takes care of any problems himself. We're here for other reasons. For fuck's sake, Scott mutters. Being a hunter isn't a bad thing, you know. No, I don't know, Stiles says. I don't know that at all. I mean, okay, some hunters seem to stay on the straight and narrow, sure, but a pretty fair portion of them do horrible things. So I'm going to go ahead and not associate with them. You can't hold us responsible for what other hunters do, Scott protests. Now Stiles is pissed. You know what, Scott? I damn well can, and I damn well will. All of you are fucking complicit. There are hunters out there who commit atrocities, and the rest of you just brush it off and say, oh, we're not all like that. You don't even get on a soapbox and say, hey, maybe don't rape and murder children. You're so busy worried that supernaturals are going to paint you all with the same brush that you can't even be bothered to condemn the ones in your own ranks doing this shit. Scott flushes a dark red. I'm not denying there are some bad apples, okay? Oh my God, Stiles shouts. Do you fucking hear yourself? That argument doesn't impress me when it's regarding police brutality, and it sure as hell doesn't impress me now. It's like everyone forgets that there's a second half to that phrase. It's not a few bad apples give the rest of the orchard an undeserved ill reputation. It's a few bad apples spoil the barrel. Take your apples and shove them up your ass. What do you want us to do? Scott asks. Just let you murder people? No. Do you think I wanted this? Do you think 10-year-old me sat at home thinking, gosh, I sure do hope I can be a vigilante someday. I want you guys to take care of people like Kate before they burn down a house full of innocent people. Trust me, I know damn well you didn't want this, Scott says bitterly. But then Peter fucking Hale happened, and you're going to stand there and say that we're the bad guys? Damn right I am, Stiles says, especially compared to Peter. Right, Scott replies. The guy who kidnaps and brainwashes a 10-year-old. He's a real stand-up guy. Oh, fuck you, Stiles says. Don't tell me you've bought into that bullshit going around on the forum that I have Stockholm Syndrome. I knew damn well what I was doing. Hell, the whole thing was my idea. What do you think would have happened to me if I'd been left here? I would have been a fountain of misplaced rage. No, you would have gotten help, Scott shouts. You would have seen a therapist. Who would have made it okay that my father was murdered in cold blood? Of course it wouldn't have been okay, but you would have learned to deal with it. Jesus, Styles. You talk about this like you're the only child whose parent has ever been murdered in the history of time. Other kids learn to handle it without becoming serial killers. Sure, you would have entertained thoughts of revenge, of being a vigilante and bringing justice to the world, but without Peter, they would have just been thoughts. It's not Peter's fault that the world needs some damn justice, Styles retorts. No, but it is Peter's fault that you could have been okay and you're not, Scott says, impatiently wiping tears off his cheeks. You're not okay and you're not going to be okay, and I hate him for that. Styles wants to ask Scott who the hell he thinks he is to decide if Styles is okay, but he stops before he does, because he knows Scott is right. I might not be okay, but it's not his fault. You can keep the blame on Kate's doorstep. She's the one who killed my father. I'm not going to stand here and defend Kate Argent, Scott says. She was a killer. She was wrong. But her being wrong doesn't make what Peter did right. Oh my God, Styles says again, although this time it's just an angry mutter. He takes a deep breath, then slowly lets it out. Look, whatever. I'm not here to justify myself to you or anyone else. I didn't even figure anyone would recognize me. We can't change anything that happened, so why don't we just go our separate ways and forget we ever saw each other? Are you fucking serious? Scott asks. Do you actually think we could do that? I could, Styles says, looking away. I gave up on all this back then. Yeah, well, Scott says, his voice rough. I didn't get a choice. Styles stops, taken aback by the emotion in Scott's voice. He rubs a hand over the back of his head, feeling suddenly uncertain. Yeah, okay. I'm sorry about that, for what it's worth, which probably isn't much. It's just that losing my dad really fucked me up, which you know, obviously, because it's the basis for your theory that Peter manipulated me. Okay, I'm gonna stop talking now. Scott gives a snort. Just tell me one thing. Are you staying here in Beacon Hills? No, Styles says, and sees Scott's expression tighten. I'm sorry, okay? I can't just stay here. Not after what happened. I mean, I can't stay anywhere. The hunters know who I am now, and they'll always be looking for me. Nothing can change that now. Yeah, you're right about that. Scott shoves his hands into his pockets, shoulders hunching. Then I'll see you when I see you, I guess. Styles nods, his throat suddenly tight and aching. I'll see you when I see you, he echoes, and turns and heads out the door. He jogs back to the car and then drives back to the hotel, trying not to think too hard about what had just happened. Peter, unsurprisingly, is concerned. Something you want to tell me? I ran into my old friend Scott, Styles says, setting the food down. He recognized me, so that sucked about 100 times over. He's part of the local hunting element, and he thinks you kidnapped and brainwashed me. It was a real fun talk. I can imagine. Peter is looking at Styles closely. Are you okay? Honestly? No. I feel like I got kicked in the stomach repeatedly. Peter nods as if this makes sense to him. Are we okay? Yeah. I mean, I guess it's always possible he might track us back to our hotel and give that info out and stuff. But he said he knew the obituary killer was me for years and never said anything because he knew what the hunters would do. So I don't think he will. That's not what I meant, Peter says. I meant, are you okay with me? Styles glances over at him and tries for a smile, which he only partly manages. You didn't brainwash me, Peter. You didn't force me into anything. I asked you to take me to the police station and let me go home, and you did it. Would I have had a better life if you left me here? Sure, maybe. It would have been an easier life. That's sure as hell true. But Howard Bell had killed 17 people, 8 of them kids. Greg McManus killed 26. Neither of them were going to stop. None of them were going to stop. There are people who are alive today because of what we've done, and that balances it out, in my opinion. He shrugs a little and says, "Did you do the right thing? Probably not, if we're going to deep dive into ethical dilemma. But you didn't do it to benefit yourself. You were grieving too, so yeah, we're okay, Peter." Peter studies him for a long moment, then nods, reaching out to run a hand over the back of Styles' hair and his neck, then pull him in for a hug. "Okay." Styles hugs him back. "Come on, let's eat. Food's already gotten cold enough." "And whose fault is that?" Peter says, and Styles laughs. Styles is over at Derek's when there's a knock on the hotel room door. Peter goes over and looks through the peephole and somehow isn't surprised to see that it's Chris Argent standing there. Despite their general, "we open our doors for no one" policy, he knows that Chris isn't going away anytime soon. So he cracks the door open, leaving the chain on. 36 hours. You're really slipping." Chris scowls at him reflexively and says, "Open the damn door so we can talk."
No, I don't think so. What do you want?"
"I want to have a goddamn conversation with you without having to call in backup or tell the police that a serial killer is staying in room 410 at the Holiday Inn, so they'll open the door for me." Peter sighs and closes the door so he can slide off the chain before standing back to let Chris inside.
10 years and you still have no sense of humor."
Chris doesn't dignify that with a reply. "What are you doing here, Peter?"
"Protecting my niece and nephew, obviously. What are you doing here?"
"I'm trying to find a way to prevent a goddamn war." Chris paces around the small hotel room, rubbing his hands over his hair. "You have no idea what sort of can of worms you opened up. Or maybe you do. Not just internal conflict between hunters, but you're involving the goddamn mundanes. The police have figured out that your victims are connected, that there's an entire network of murderers operating in this country, so they started investigating your victims' victims and realizing that a lot of them were connected, that one group of people is targeting another group. They haven't figured out how or why yet, but they'll get there." "So?" Peter goes over to the little refrigerator in the hotel room and pulls out a can of Dr. Pepper, cracking it open.
"That's my problem, how?"
"It's gonna be everyone's problem if werewolves make it to the 6 o'clock news." Peter shakes his head.
"It was always inevitable, and we both know it. As society modernizes, it was only a matter of time before someone caught something supernatural on their camera phone and posted it to YouTube. There are already hundreds of videos like that out there. People make up ways to debunk them and ramble about CGI, but the weight of evidence is going to start to add up."
"People are really good at not seeing what they don't want to see," Chris says.
"Sure," Peter says, marveling at the way they've fallen back into the same old easy conversation, despite the decade that has passed. "But there's also a lot of people who want to believe."
Chris sighs. "You do know that your group is the one that's going to come off a lot worse in that reveal, don't you? People are terrified of things that are different from them. You'll be rounded up and put in internment camps. Hunters will be the heroes." Peter gives a snort of laughter.
"Oh, sure. You're clearly unaware of our many, many fans online. There's an entire website dedicated to people talking about how their loved ones were murdered and pleading for us to intervene."
"That's not the point." Chris pinches the bridge of his nose. "You're being obtuse and you know it."
"I know that we, supernaturals in general, not me and Styles in specific, have the moral high ground. That we're the ones who are able to say, if we're so threatening, so frightening, why didn't you know about us decades or centuries earlier? I know that you and your kind are the ones who murder children."
Chris's face goes tight, and he lets out a slow breath. "Look, about what Kate did, it's not that I'm okay with that. I wouldn't have said you were wrong if you had hunted her down and killed her. Hell, you basically did. But you're starting a war you can't win."
"If I'm starting a war, which, frankly, I still think I'm not, then you better start thinking about whose damn side you're on, mine or Kate's. Peter takes a drink of his soda and says casually, did you know she's still alive? It's clear that Chris didn't. His eyes go wide and he stares at Peter in shock. What?
Your sister, alive. Your father brought in an outside doctor to say she'd had post-surgery complications and sign off on her death certificate. He identified her body, so there was no need for fingerprints or DNA. I still wonder about whose body that was. Do you think they found a Jane Doe who could pass? Or do you think your father went out and murdered an innocent woman because she had the misfortune to look like Kate?
He sees Chris's sick expression and twists the knife. Oh, wait. I don't wonder. I know. He takes out a folder and throws it at Chris. Denise Lamond, 5'8", 140, blonde hair. Went missing from Williams, California, the day before Kate was pronounced dead. Vanished without a trace. Leaving behind a husband and two kids. Car was never found, but I bet they'd find it if they dredged Clear Lake. So why don't you take your goddamn concern about the war I'm starting and choke on it? Chris turns away, one hand rubbing over his face. Peter almost feels bad for him. But then again, Chris has had the evidence for years. The fact that he's never believed his family would be capable of such a thing is on his own head. Finally, he says, is that why you're here? Because of Kate? Peter shrugs. What if I am? You know that my father will show up too, right?
Fine by me. Saves me the trouble of having to look for him.
Chris lets out a slow breath. Peter, you were in over your head. You can't go up against my father and win. You know that.
I used to know that. But a lot's changed in the past 10 years. You might have noticed.
Yeah, since you ask. I did notice the fact that you abducted a child and trained him to be a vigilante. Speaking of that moral high ground you were so sure you were standing on.
You'll note that when I said we were standing there, I said specifically that I was referring to supernatural creatures in general, not myself and Stiles. I am well aware that my morals are ambiguous at best, though frankly, I do take offense at everybody's idea that I brainwashed him. He didn't need my help to hate hunters after Kate murdered his father.
He still could have had a normal life, Chris says.
This from the man who has an entire contingent of hunters in Northern California, but never bothered to do anything about Sam Stearns, the Sacramento hunter who was so careless with his wolfsbane that he poisoned two humans along with their werewolf friends. Cry me a fucking river, Chris. You don't give a shit about Stiles, so don't you dare talk to me about what would have been best for him.
Chris has to close his eyes for a few moments while he wrestles with his emotions. Fine. You do what you're going to do, but don't expect any help from me.
You say that like I ever have, Peter shot back. I neither need nor want your help, Chris. Just don't get in my way.
Chris's jaw tightens, but then he nods and walks away. Peter slams the door after him. Stiles listens to the story of what had happened with Chris, and then says, so, like, what's up with that? You two have a history, clearly. Amused, Peter says,
that's your takeaway from this discussion?
Well, yeah, none of the rest of it surprises me. But that, I absolutely want to hear more about. Peter rolls his eyes.
It's nowhere near as exciting as you clearly think it is. Yes, we both grew up in Beacon Hills. We were forbidden to associate with each other, so naturally we were curious about each other. I met Chris rather by accident when he got a supernatural injury that needed to be treated by the local druids. His father had a tendency to send him into dangerous situations without much information and roll the dice on whether or not he'd be strong enough to survive.
Sounds like what we know of the guy. Peter nods.
After we had a truce with the local hunters, we met more frequently. He became something of a project of me and Talia's, as we tried to convince him to come over to our side. But he's stubborn and hard-headed and deliberately ignorant in many ways. I got frustrated with him quickly and usually gave up before Talia did. I still find him incredibly frustrating.
He's smart enough to know all the ways he's wrong, but continues to turn a blind eye to far too many things.
Okay. Styles considers this, then says, so what's our next move?
Nothing. The ball is in Kate's court. We have to wait and see what she does when she gets here.
Chris knows where we are. Do you think that he'll tell her?
No, but it won't take her long to figure out. On the upside, I doubt she'd make a move on us here. No, she'll go for Derek and Laura, almost certainly. I wish Laura wasn't being so recalcitrant about the whole thing.
Styles shrugs.
I mean, Derek isn't thrilled about this either, you know. He'll forgive the whole we put them at risk with our killing spree thing because he thinks we're doing good work. But he hates the fact that we're luring Kate here and putting their pack in danger to get to her. I don't even think that he's wrong.
I suppose not. But they're making the mistake of thinking Kate wouldn't come after them eventually anyway.
True. Styles rubs a hand through his hair. I don't know. I guess I can't blame them for not being entirely rational about it. They're scared, you know? They haven't spent the last 10 years training like we have.
Peter sighs.
I suppose that's fair.
So, how do we protect Laura's pack when she doesn't want us anywhere near her?
Styles asks. Can we watch Chris's house and then follow her? I don't know if she'll stop in and see Chris. She has to know that he won't approve of what she did. But we'll know if she does, because I cloned his phone when he was here the other day. The other possibility is Chris's daughter, Allison. I remember him mentioning more than once that she and Kate were close. And if Kate finds out that Allison is dating your childhood best friend, she'll know it might give her a path to you. The third option is Gerard. He's clearly still in touch with his daughter. If we can get to him, we can get to her.
I won't say better men have tried, Styles says, but I will say other men have tried.
Yes, but they weren't us, Peter says, smirking. Remember how we were thinking it wasn't worth paying that doctor a visit? Let's revisit that. Hunting is a dangerous business. Gerard has almost certainly used him more than once. That means there will be a money trail, and I bet the doctor will be a lot more open to persuasion than some of the hunters we've met.
Styles nods slowly.
How far is it to Woodside? 3.5 hours, maybe. Easy enough to get there and back in a day.
Okay, then. Styles cracks his knuckles. Let's go.